Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I explore the nature of reality, and one of the foundations of our reality is the idea of time. Tonight's guest is going to be talking about time travel technologies. His name is David Anderson of the Anderson Institute. Welcome, David. Thanks for being a guest.
Alan, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here on New Realities.
Yeah, well, this is a subject I'm very excited about and fascinated about, how we can really, as it seems according to your website and interviews I've heard, how we can really travel through time. I mean, you're saying it's really possible to shift the nature of the time-space continuum, as they say.
Absolutely, yes. I think many people have realized that our focus is our reality, but what's happening with the technology has been very amazing. We've been involved in this research for nearly 30 years now. And what's really fascinating, and I'm sure today we'll talk a little bit about the technology, but what's most interesting coming out of what we're learning in the laboratories is what it means to human consciousness and what it means to our very definition of reality and the paradigms that it creates and how we think about ourselves and our place in space and time. So as much as it's about the technology, it's also a very important issue, what's being learned as it affects human society and human consciousness as a whole.
Well, can you define time? I mean, Einstein said time is what we measure with a clock, and other people say there is no such thing as time because there's only the present moment. So how would you give us a very basic definition of time?
Well, I think that is challenging because human society as a whole for almost two millennia has been struggling with that answer. We have the ancient beliefs of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism that looks at either time as a circle or all time past, present, and future existing. We see the great philosophers, those that the entire world respects and admires, like Plato, who defined time first as the moving image of eternity. Later, Aristotle, in the 4th century BC, described it as a number of measure of motion. Plotinus later defined it more as the productive life of the soul, a little bit more of a metaphysical definition. But the best definition I've seen really has come from St. Augustine, who in the 4th century came up with a very new way of defining time. And it really holds today in our world of mathematics and physics. And his definition was very simple, is that time is an illusionary product of our mind.
Well, if that's true, then how is it that you can manipulate something that's an illusion of our mind, you know?
Well, I think the real question is, the real question becomes our definitions of time. How do I want to say it? My favorite quote that we use with college students all around the world and anybody we speak to is, we don't see our universe as it truly is. We see our universe as we are. And even having a conversation about time in this culture, we think of time either linearly or time not moving. This concept that the past, present, and future exists all at the same time is very valid from a physical science standpoint. But the ability to move and to be able to look at that microscopic view of that particular dimension in the universe is what the technology addresses. But I think another important point for your listeners who may be skeptical, you know, especially in the Western culture, a lot of people don't realize that they define time through a combination of four things. Their biological culture, biological evolution, where their cultural evolution, through their senses, which are very limited and only sense a very microscopic part of this very beautiful macroscopic universe we live in. And the third is really the function of our human mind, which has evolved as a very simple purpose. And if you ask a scientist who are experts in the field, there's one single function of the human mind, and that's to rationalize what it senses, the body's senses perceive with the mind's own belief system. And since the senses are limited, people don't see it. So the idea that time moves or time stays still, it really is an illusion of the mind. And we even see cultures on the earth that treat time completely different from others.
But in developing your technology that can affect time, you must have had some standard you were using in order to, you know, manipulate this thing, however we choose to define it. So what were you calling it in your research?
Okay, in our research, we have many, many different approaches, but let's use the Western approach for a moment. In the case of our experiments, we create what's called a time warp field, a spherical field within which time rates can be accelerated or slowed down. So, for example, using a cesium-based clock, a reference clock outside of the field, the same type of reference clock inside the field, we actually can generate fields where the time rates inside the field move at a completely different rate than outside. Of course, that's using the measure of, you know, oscillations of cesium as a reference frame. But there's also, your question, Alan, is excellent. I love it because mm-hmm. many people don't ask this. It really is, what is your reference? Time is also a function of our conscious energy as well, and that's not an area where we are experts, just to let you know. We really are a collection of computer scientists, physicists, and mathematicians.
So you have a time warp generator, meaning when you put something in that, besides that cesium clock, whatever it is, could either be accelerated faster than the present time or slower than the present time? Is that what happens there?
Yes, there's essentially three things we can do. We can accelerate the rate of time inside the field, so the time inside the field moves faster than that outside. We can slow down the time rate inside the field. And a relatively new area, when I say relative, it's only about 8 years of experience now in the lab, we actually have the ability to reverse time rates inside the field itself, which is which has been a very challenging but a very eye-opening experience as we continue to learn more about the nature of time itself.
You could reverse time rates. So like in H.G. Wells' book, I think he sets a calendar for a certain date and he goes back to that time or forward. Can you do something like that, actually set a date and reverse the time rate so you are actually, you know, 100 years in the past?
Yeah, we can. A little bit of a longer answer. We can accelerate and slow down time rates, and we have done that in controlled experiments with living organisms, including people. With regards to reversing time rates, we can do that with a living organism. It is not something we've done with people because we do have a technical issue that we have to overcome, and that has to do with stability of the field when we reverse time rates.
Well, I'm still not understanding exactly what it means to reverse time rates. How can you say that in a simpler way?
Okay, a simple way. For example, we do experiments where we actually put living organisms, plants, for example, or flowering plants inside the time warp field chamber. Not only can we accelerate the time rates where the plants will actually grow the equivalent of 4 days of growth, say, in 30 minutes of time, we actually can reverse time rates where the living organism actually regresses back in time, and we'll see a flowering bud actually reverse and revert into its original bud or seedling.
I'm just trying to get the picture. So people looking at this time warp generator field, standing outside of it, can see the bud that's been blooming reverse back in, go backwards in time.
Absolutely correct. We've actually released some video of that we use it in our live seminars where we share the results of the experiments that we have attained on that. As I mentioned, though, a lot of people want to ask, well, have you put humans in a reversed in a time chamber, sending them backwards in time? And the answer to that is no, we don't, because of again a technical issue that has to do with stability of the boundary layer of the field.
What does that mean exactly, the boundary layer of the field?
Well, let's maybe just a little bit of history. We began our work on this with the Time Technology Research Center back in the 1980s. In the 1990s, we built our first time warp field generator where we could actually accelerate and slow down time rates. One of the problems that we wrestled with through the entire 1990s was the fact that the field, that there's time rates that are either moving faster or slower inside the field and the normal time rate outside. Across that boundary layer, where the time rates change dramatically, we get like an effect of a Doppler effect. I think many of your listeners would know this. Like, for example, when an ambulance is coming towards you or a police car, the siren is very high-pitched, and as it moves away, it drops dramatically. Essentially, the sound frequencies are either increased or decreased. In our boundary layer of the field where time rates change, the frequencies are also increased or decreased, but in some cases, the increase would put the energy into an area of harmful radiation that was not healthy for a living organism. And it took us quite an amount of time. And that's the boundary layer problem that we had. We solved that in 2002 with our third generation time warp field generator. But what we haven't solved yet is when we reverse time rates, the fields tend to collapse and then reopen again. And as that moves through living tissue or living organisms, it's not a desirable effect.
I see. Of course, everyone wants to know, how is it that you're actually generating this time warp field? Can you give us a hint? Can you talk about what the mechanism is?
Certainly, to some degree we can. We actually, our time warp field generator, let's talk about how we initiate a field. We actually have a chamber in which we introduce a chemical reagent. We use a high-energy laser array with a very specific rotating electromagnetic field to generate and open the field. Once the field opens, which is quite a spectacular event, it collapses a little bit, and then it stabilizes. Once it's open,
what does it look like when the field opens, if you say it's spectacular?
It's quite spectacular. The colors and the noise, the reaction itself is there's quite brilliant lights. There's quite amount of energy. There's quite amount of sound. Even when the field stabilizes, we get a little bit of let's call it a watery effect. It looks like the surface ripple effects of a watery surface. That's not because there's a substance to it. It's more of the Dopplering of light through the boundary layer itself.
Wow.
Now
that's amazing. Go ahead.
And it's, you know, once it opened up and it stabilizes, then we have that field. What we didn't know, Alan, actually was interesting. We're very proud of what we do, but we're also very humble when it comes to not knowing what we're doing. When the 1990s, when we built our first two time warp field generators, we didn't understand that after the field was generated, we were getting more power out of it than we were putting into it. And I'm going back to answer your question. We didn't understand that because that violates the laws of mathematics and physics and the conservation of energy. What we finally learned in 2002 was that the energy that we were using to create these fields of closed time-like curves, which allows this to happen, was actually coming from the curvature of space-time, naturally occurring energy that surrounds the Earth today. And that there's an effect in physics, not to bore your audience to tears, but it's called inertial frame dragging. And essentially, as the Earth spins, it actually bends space-time around it like a spring. And if the Earth were to be moved really quickly, space-time would snap back. And essentially what a time warp field generator does is it harnesses that naturally occurring potential energy, and it concentrates it. And it's really that simple.
Well, it's not exactly that simple. But the other thing, I mean, we'll get back to that, but I have always thought that somehow DNA is somehow hooked up to the present moment, and we kind of keep the life force current with the time space field. Does that make sense at all? You know, as we move through time, as the human consciousness moves through time space in a body, there's a DNA component to its relationship to time and space.
Well, I'm not an expert in DNA, but I can tell you something very fascinating we learned. One thing we do believe is, you know, we work not just at the Anderson Institute, we work with the DRDO in India, some advanced technology groups in China and Korea, and of course here in the United States. And the one thing we've learned from our experiments is that the belief that the universe is truly a dynamic web of energy and that we're all interconnected, not even across space, but also across time, all areas of time, is something we see as is completely accurate. But the one thing about DNA that was interesting to us, and this is where we're very excited about the impact that time control technology can have on society. It really has the potential to change our lives and reality in ways that are very, very difficult to comprehend. Some of those are very good, and some of those can be catastrophic. For example, one of the areas that focuses on DNA, a lot of people think they can exercise time control technology safely. We actually do an experiment. It's called Brothers and Sisters. And in this experiment, we have, let's say it's the grandfather of a family of seedlings with a specific DNA pattern. We take a system backwards in time, and we destroy that grandfather of the family of plant seedlings. And we record that information. We put it in a time warp field chamber. It goes backwards in time. The original grandfather is destroyed. Now, according to the popular myth in movies and theater, if you go back...
Well, and Michio Kaku as well propagated that myth about, you know, that story. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It's called the grandfather paradox. And if you go, for your listeners, if you go back in time and kill your grandfather, then your father was never born, so you were never born. So, therefore, you could not have gone backwards in time. And therefore, your grandfather's alive, so you are born. Now you can go back in time, and this just loops around on itself. But when we actually do an experiment, when we send things backwards in time or accelerate or slow down time, we're not just affecting what's inside the field. We're actually changing the construct of reality outside of the field. What we see is that this belief about parallel universes branching off is simply a place where irrational minds are bumping into their own limitations. We see multiple realities, and we see multiple dimensions of this universe that might represent multiple realities, but we don't see parallel universes coming out of the results of these experiments. And if I could go back for a second for your listeners, imagine you're in the laboratory and you put, the information about the DNA pattern of some plant seedlings that are away from your experiment in your office or in your lab, and you send that information backwards in time, you destroy the grandparent, and you come back. What's interesting is the DNA information inside the chamber didn't change, and the makeup of the plants that were included there did not change. But because we triggered the death of the grandfather of that seedling in the past, the makeup of the DNA of the plant seedlings around us that had nothing to do with the experiment changed, and we were unaware of it. And that's the real danger of these technologies, is that it really redefines the construct of reality itself.
Wait, let me see if I understand that. So if you went back in time and you killed the grandfather of these plants, you're saying the children of those plants never manifested, but all the other plants were affected as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, essentially the children never manifested, but the seedlings that were descendants of that grandfather that was terminated backwards in time, actually their DNA makeup changed and did not match what we brought back in time in the recorded information inside the chamber itself. Just absolutely fascinating. And that's one of the dangers, actually. You know, a lot of people believe that, you know, if I could, this time control technology is just absolutely amazing, where we're really accomplishing some fascinating things. But at the same time, the results of this and the risk to affect the construct of reality really come with a great responsibility. And the problem is, every time the human race has developed more technological power, we've had to have a greater sense of moral and ethical guidelines to control how we use that and how we manage it wisely for the benefit of human society. The challenge is now is that this technology, why many people Many organizations are experimenting with it. They think they can control it when, in fact, every time they experiment it, they may be having a ripple effect or butterfly effect on other aspects of reality, even if it's unintentional. And this gap between the technological power and promise within time control technology and our ability to understand the consequences of using it has grown quite large in recent years.
So you're still understanding the consequences as you further your experiments. But just to go back to that grandfather situation in the plan, so you're saying the DNA of the offsprings of that plant changed, even though in a sense they shouldn't even exist if you destroyed the grandfather, but they do exist, you're saying.
Exactly. The offspring that were inside the chamber, along with a written record of their DNA, go backwards in time. Inside the mm-hmm. chamber, a triggering mechanism is activated that destroys the grandfather, and then we bring those offspring forward in time, still with the written record of their DNA. Mm-hmm. When we take them out of the chamber, the written record matches their DNA, but their brothers and sisters that were left behind now no longer have the same DNA makeup as that control set of offspring, as you call them, that were inside the chamber. So by going backwards in time and changing something, a parallel universe didn't split off. What we actually did was change the construct of reality. And the grandson, for example, in the grandfather paradox, does not disappear. If that grandson goes backwards in time and kills his grandfather, he doesn't vanish. Essentially, the construct of this web of information and energy has been changed. He will now continue in that time period and move forward back in time, but the construct of reality around him will change.
Well, could it be like, and I thought about this, like a sort of a different generation of a universe had manifested that was different because something was changed in the past. So, in a possibly related universe, the grandfather still existed and everything around it is the same, but since you've created a different time field, you split off from that other universe and created a second generation universe, let's say, that manifests in a different way. Or am I getting too abstract there?
No, actually, I like what you're saying. I like your term manifesting in a different way. We don't mm-hmm. see the popular concept in theater and fiction of parallel universes. You know, for your listeners, a lot of people say you go backwards in time, you kill your grandfather, one timeline moves forward with your grandfather dead, and another one moves forward with him alive. Essentially, time splits. And there's a belief that every second, every fraction of a second, every time we have a thought or do an action, multiple parallel universes are splitting off. We don't see that. What we do see, though, is what you say, and it's very subtle, is that the construct of this universe and this reality manifests itself in a different way. Of course, the dynamic web of information and energy that really eventually is the root of everything that makes us up is still there intact. It's been reshaped or manifested in a different way in the reality that we perceive with our senses. And another example, mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. No, I'll ask it after. Yeah.
I'll give another example. A lot of people might we have another analogy that we use. Imagine for your listeners you have a flower bed outside your home. Moving through time is just like moving through space. And believe it or not, mathematically, that can be discussed as well within the laws of physics. But moving through space, imagine you were to start at one end of your flower bed, walk across it, and then return right to the same point that you left from. You would have done something interesting. You would have trampled on some flowers that would no longer be able to survive. You might have spread some dirt and seeds in different areas that caused new life and energy and consciousness to surface. And then, of course, the ripple effects or butterfly effects that spin off that. But you started at one point in space. You moved across and you came back. Yet, you changed the construct of reality. And believe it or not, the impact with time control technology, whether it be sending living organisms or material forward and backwards in time, or just information, has the same effect. The process of moving that information or matter forward or backwards actually changes the construct of reality. The ripple effects might be trivial, where you barely notice them or don't notice them at all, or they can be exceedingly dramatic.
Like, can you give me an example of something dramatic like that?
I'll give you a couple. One of them would be our brothers and sisters experiment, the extrapolation of that. Essentially, even though there were living organisms outside of this time warp field, away from the experiment, the process of moving a living organism backwards in time, completing an action, and forward in time, actually changed the construct of those living organisms down to its DNA. And if it's a living organism that's not a plant, that may include different aspects of consciousness or reality. There are some other things that can happen that aren't good. First off, we talked about there is an incredible complex web of interdependencies when you try to think what one action in affecting a timeline could have. And in many cases when we have technology, we have that capability to through our human ethics, to really correlate and manage a greater knowledge and power with a greater need for more responsibility. And this is the foundation that we try as a human society to work on. And until recently, many people might disagree some ways. For human society as a whole, the principle has been pretty effective, that our human capacity for moral reasoning has kept pace with our development in our knowledge and capacities. But when you look at this technology, as much as there are wonderful things that I'd like to talk about, there are some really opportunities for suffering. We see the contamination of timelines. We see the redefinition of individual lives and consciousness. If poorly managed, there are the risks of transcription errors, where when an object moves through time or backward in time, if it's not managed safely from a technological standpoint, the physical makeup of that living organism can be mutated, and that's not a good thing, obviously. But there are
it sounds like a short story I read a long time ago about these time travelers that go back to the dinosaur times, and everything's fine except they find out that this guy stepped on a butterfly, and they come back to the present, and the language is the same, but they spell the words different. Like you're saying, if the slightest thing is changed, it could warp a whole reality in a different way.
Exactly. The butterfly effect, the very old story, a butterfly flaps its wings on one side of the world, and then through a chain reaction of events, it turns into a monsoon, destroying many lives and causing dramatic suffering on another side of the world. These things are very difficult, and the reason they're difficult is the technology is actually, believe it or not, relatively easy to develop. There are 5 countries and about 8 organizations who are actively exercising time control technologies today. The problem is they don't really understand the ramifications of what they're doing. And believe it or not, one of the other concerns is social unrest that could occur. And if you think about our societies and all the different cultures on our planet, so many beautiful cultures, but so many moments in the past that define those events. For example, a lot of people wonder what would happen if someone were to, for Christians, if somebody was to travel backwards in time and view or record or observe the crucifixion of Christ. What if it truly happened? What if it didn't? What does this mean to the religions and the things that we hold sacred? As much as it would be the truth, would it really be the truth, and what would be the impacts of this? We even have a lot of people and I try to think of a positive way to say this. For your listeners, I got to tell you, when you look at this type of scientific breakthrough, it doesn't offer just commercial prospects. The prospects that it offer attracts tremendous interest and investment from private sectors, private businesses, governments, all different types of agencies and institutions. And I got to tell you, one cannot underestimate the financial aspirations and the powers of these businesses and how they want to use this technologies. There are so many that want to use it for good. But one of the problems is that the range of technological possibilities that the new technologies open up are so enormous is that the only limitations of what we do really are the results of our imaginations, which is insufficient. But there's so many people who talk about good, Alan. We look at medical applications, the possibility to have stasis fields for medical treatment, to accelerate research, to find new cures for diseases that plague human society. How about the possibility to retrieve future cures from the future to avoid that type of disaster and suffering, or retrieving information to avoid natural disasters.
Or to just move someone back in time before they had it. If they could move a plant back in time from a bloom to a bud, they can maybe move a person back from a time of illness to one where they don't have any illness.
Exactly, and there's a lot of people, there's also the possibility that they can not only bring that information forward and back, they can also bring viruses and new diseases forward and backwards in time that human society is not prepared to handle. There's also the concern, in India, the Defense Research and Development Organization there is looking at many commercial prospects for time control technology, and one of the concerns is, will that technology be made available to human society as a whole, or would only be available to the social elite and those with money? And there are so many issues here, so many opportunity for great good, and a lot of opportunity for more suffering. There's even, I have to say, there are even organizations that when they talk about the technology, all they really look at is possible weaponization of the technology, even in many ways preparing for the Earth's first great time war. It's amazing.
Wow, a time war, that would be really a strange, awful thing. I mean, is there plans of negotiating with these other countries for a time warp treaty? Is there something like that in the works?
Well, I would take this a little further for your listeners, if I may. This research isn't new. It's not just the Anderson Institute. Russia was involved in this in the 1960s. The United States was involved in the 70s. Of course, the 80s and 90s and the 90s. In the last 10 years, we've seen India, Japan, Korea get involved. We have China making moves to play with the technology. And what's interesting is that, you know, we live within this community. We do many projects with the teams in India and Japan. And the scientific community, I have to say, now is split and very concerned. They think it's a time now to step forward and to bring this, to shed more light on this. And that's one of the reasons why I'm on your show. One of the roles at the Anderson Institute isn't to promote or sell our technology. It's really now about if we're going to avoid as a human society, the many risks and potential for suffering that this new technology can cause, we need to come together. We need to drive complete transparency. We need to launch a global educational initiative. We need to determine as a human society as a whole how the technology will not just be used, but how it will be further developed, and then we have to monitor it. And in short, the answer is yes. We do have a four-step plan that I just summarized, and we're now seeing the scientific community in these different countries and agencies really willing to step forward and to make a statement.
Well, are you a private industry, or are you connected to government organizations, or if you can say, or both, or I'm just curious. I mean, if you, or maybe it doesn't matter.
No, of course. The answer is a combination of both. And really quick, your listeners might find it interesting. There are many countries that are very active in the technology now. China, for example, is making a lot of strides to try to really enter the game, but they're really not there yet, even though there's been some really interesting news fragments coming out of their country in the last 2 months. Now, Japan, they actually have a beautiful facility on the shores of Biwa Lake, just north of Kyoto City, and they are actually carrying on, maybe backtrack real quick for your listeners. There's two types of time control technology. Technology that can send information forward in time or backwards in time, and technologies that can send matter forward or backwards in time. Japan is focusing on information, very similar to what Princeton University did under Dr. Lejun Wang, what Russia did back in the 1960s, using the phenomenon of quantum entanglement and tunneling. They can send information faster than light backward in time. What Japan has done is really expanded that on a large scale. Russia, kind of when the problems hit the former Soviet Union, they lost a lot of traction. Their premier institute was the Moscow Aviation Institute, and they're finally regaining some traction, but they're really not open to us. Japan is very open to us. United States, we have S4, we have the University of Connecticut, we have Princeton University, and, of course, our facility in New Mexico, active. And in India, I got to tell you, Alan, for your listeners, watch India. Their operation is larger than the rest of the world's combined. It's an operation run by their Ministry of Science and Technology and what they call their DRDO, which is their Defense Research and Development Organization. They're already building commercial products that utilize different types of time control technology. They're developing operational mission plans to send drones forward and backwards in time. They're looking at the opportunity, which many military officials would like to see, is the opportunity to send information backwards in time on the battlefield so they could fine-tune plans with the knowledge of the results of those actions in the future.
Wow.
Just absolutely amazing. So amazing.
It's so amazing. No, please finish that. It's so amazing.
Well, what I was going to say is what's remarkable is that India – They hit a point about 6 years ago, and they took all of their best and brightest defense research scientists and engineers, and they pulled them off of what they're doing, and they threw them onto this project. It's amazing. Anybody who's close to the Ministry of Science and Technology in India will know that every leading scientist in that organization has been pulled off and now has become a part of this new technology initiative with the Indian government. It's amazing how far ahead they are. There's many reasons for that, I believe, personally, but.
Well, there's so much to ask that you just mentioned. I mean, one thing is, let's say this technology does evolve. So are we now being visited from the future into this timeline, this present moment now? Is there a way of seeing that? Is there a way of sensing that somehow?
Well, there's with regards to sensing, there's two comments I'd have. The first comment is, has history been re-engineered? We have a little statement on our website, the Anderson Institute, where history is becoming an experimental science.
Right.
I'd emphasize for your listeners, this isn't about the Anderson Institute. It's about S4. It's about India. It's about Japan. It's about South Korea. It's about Russia. History has already become an experimental science, and these governments – and private agencies, a combination of both, are experimenting with these technologies that are having effects on the construct of a reality. Some people can sense that, Alan, getting back to your point. We have a lot of people who claim that, especially in the late 1990s, they began sensing that timelines were being re-engineered and that the construct of reality was being changed in a non-natural way. Some people do have the ability to sense that themselves.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, personally, are you amazed at these breakthroughs when you first saw the time warp generator field warp time and there was that amazing display? Did you just say, oh, my God, like what's going on? I mean, it must be very exciting for you.
You have to look at it from my perspective. I actually have been in this for 30 years. I think it was in must have been around 1984, 85. I was actually a scientist with working for Air Force Systems Command and some projects with DARPA. And I observed something in a mathematical model that I had created that got me interested in this subject. And after that, I fought a long battle. It's been almost 30 years now. And so for me, this has come quite slow. And also for me, working with accelerated or slowed down time rates, this has been the case since the early 1990s. So we're talking almost 20 years. But it's been an exponential increase. But for people who see it for the first time, that's the value, Alan, because I know your show, your show is very well known. And I know that you look at how people are evolving as conscious being and our awareness of our universe around us and understanding the paradigms about how we think and feel about our place in the universe. And it's amazing. It's amazing service that you're doing for your listeners and the people that you're reaching. And that's what I see is so remarkable. When somebody who's not been working as a scientist in this every day sees the Time Warp field in action, I got to tell you, when they walk into the lab for the pre-briefing, you know, you kind of sometimes see the eyes roll, you see the skepticism, but a couple things happen. When people observe the field firsthand, they cannot believe what they're seeing right in front of their eyes.
Can you just describe what they are seeing when they observe the field?
When they see time rates accelerated or slowed down, especially things that contradict their human senses, remember our senses are limited. When they see things, for example, if you slow down time rates inside a time warp field, it also slows down effects that we would see as being unnatural, like gravity. So when you see a mechanical device and you see an object falling inside a time warp field, and we modulate the field to slow down the time rate, and that object actually falls, slows down, and hovers in free space and even reverses itself, moving upward, the feeling is disbelief. But the real value in that, Alan, is people finally get it when they see it. They realize that all of a sudden what they sense and perceive with their senses and their cultural evolution, which blinds them, is really a small part of the magic that makes up our universe. The effect is so profound that the reaction to it is a little bit of disbelief at first, but it ranges everywhere from laughing out loud hysterically to crying. And the thing that I tell everybody I speak with, and especially, you know, the people who see this, they typically call us back in a week or two or three, and they'll tell us they can no longer go through life the same way because they realize there's so much more depth to our universe than what they sense, perceive, and have the ability to comprehend. And after they see a time warp field in operation, they really kind of reach a really deep personal awareness and an understanding of how little they see. They realize what we're trying to communicate is that we do not see our universe the way it is. We see the universe the way we are, which is a very limited, crippled view of what really makes up our reality. The technology helps us transcend that.
Yeah, no, that's why I call this program New Realities, because I've always had an inkling that there was much more to the universe than we were aware of and educated and conditioned to believe. So I know that's true. I mean, I'd love to go out to your lab and check that out for myself. Do you have visitors out there?
Yeah, the clearance process takes about 6 to 12 months, depending on your authorization level. But you know, that's something we might be able to talk about. But for your listeners, the real value here, the epiphany that everybody reaches, center around the statement: we don't see our universe the way it is; we see it the way we are. And you have to think. The analogy I like to use for your people listening, your audience, think of the old television set sitting on the table in front of you. The airwaves, the air is filled with waves of information and energy flying through the sky. You reach up to the TV and you flip the little tuner to a channel, and it looks at that one tiny piece of that information and energy flying through the sky, and it lets you see and understand it. That's what the human mind is. The human mind is a tuner. The universe really is a dynamic web of information and energy. Everything we define in it, we know that to be true. The problem is the human mind is a tuner trying to tune into virtually an infinite number of channels, but it only has the ability to tune into those that are available for most people by those five primary senses. Of course, there's people who are gifted, and I'm not one of them. I need technology as a crutch. But we do know people, that 2% of the population, that have the ability to sense and perceive and transcend time through training of their minds, different other types of techniques, or just a natural genetic gift.
Well, it's not just that we perceive reality through our five senses. It's the conditioning of those senses. I mean, there's so much more just in front of us that we could actually see, but we've blocked it out of our awareness or hear if we fine-tune our hearing. I mean, there's so much more to just our senses than we realize as well. And we have to kind of open up that conditioned mind to perceive a greater reality. But getting back to your technology, can you say that there is a future that has already happened, or is the future still an unknown possibility?
I would say that the future is uncertain. We all, you know, in many ways, this technology, in not just our technology, but look at what's coming out of the particle accelerators and super colliders and all the quantum mechanics. Essentially, what we're discovering is that the world is a dynamic web of information and energy, and everything in it is interconnected, and everything we do affects everything else. And aren't we simply rediscovering ancient wisdom with all this? And and I lost your point of the question. I was making a loop back. Could you repeat the question?
No, is there a future that actually has happened, or is it yet to be created?
And that's kind of my point. We're all interconnected, and every action, every focused thought we have does change the construct of reality. It's not just about technology. We have the power of the human mind to do that. So I do believe that the future is uncertain. I do believe that the future holds great potential risk to us, because for the first time as a human society on this planet, we're working with a technology where the effects of using it are incredibly good and incredibly catastrophic. But unlike other technologies, let's say, for example, nuclear energy and nuclear weapons, we can't see the results of this technology. And that's where the gap between the power of the technology and our capacity for predicting the complex consequences of using it needs to be tempered by a moral and ethical reasoning that we don't have today. And that's our concern.
Well, even you, if you decide to send something into the future, you're saying you might not know what kind of effect that will have on the current timeline.
That is correct. And that we implement a lot of controls. And I got to tell you, we also, even with our controls, we're not certain of the effects that we have. But even worse, there are institutions around the world that are exercising these technologies without any regard for it, at relatively high power levels, and that is quite concerning to us.
Well, it's not only a concern, they actually may have already affected the timeline somehow. Is there a way of monitoring timeline control technologies or something like that, do you know?
Well, yeah, there's two ways, actually. We are very active in this four-step plan: transparency, global education. We need to come up with a moral compass to guide further development and use, but monitoring is a big part. And believe it or not, monitoring the activation of time control technologies is even easier than monitoring nuclear reactor activity. So we have a device called a TTD. It stands for a temporal tremor detector. For your listeners, it's like a seismic detector that has the ability to detect any time a time control technology is activated. And our hope is to, in the coming years, to have a network of these deployed in space with the ability to monitor the entire planet for activations of the technology for monitoring. But there is another way, and that comes back to that 2% of the population that is extremely gifted. And like I said, unfortunately, I kind of wish I fell into that 2%. You know, there are people, and we see it, that have that capability next to technology to essentially transcend time, the ability to project consciousness, to exercise other senses and other capabilities like transmutation, transmigration, the ability to remote view, and other capabilities. We even have people who sit next to our time warp field generator who can accurately predict the results and can sense the results without the use of any technology. But again, that's not our area of expertise. We just make the observation.
You can have training in that. I mean, I've been trained in remote viewing. It's very, it's very practical. It works. But getting the monitoring of it. So you said you can sense when any time anyone in the world uses a time warp device.
If we deploy in space a network of these TTDs, these temporal tremor detectors, there would be an ability for human society as a whole to have a true global monitoring of any time somebody exercised the technology.
Mm. And so you'd have to, everyone would have to work together because that would just be in the best interest of the planet itself.
That's the challenge. You know, with the technology like the internet and so on we have today, we can get transparency. Not just ourselves, mm-hmm. other people are stepping forward. We're going to see scientists from India and Japan and even China reaching out crying for transparency. We will see education. But the third step to be successful, we need to establish what I like to call a global moral compass, a committee that represents all human society, that spans all lines of nations, politics, geography, religions, that looks at what is best for human society as whole and makes a decision together for the benefit of human society. And that's one of the challenges that we have to overcome and perhaps one of the most difficult. But while the risks of this technology are incredibly high, the benefits are also very high, and we believe that perhaps, maybe since we're looking at a technology that has the ability to change our world finally in a way that's never been comprehended before, maybe it's an opportunity where the whole world can unite and cross those boundaries that have separated people before.
Well, that would be pretty amazing. And that's, of course, what we've all been looking for, that one peaceful, stable world where everything's in harmony, and maybe this is the thing that will bring it about. As far as that temporal monitoring device, are you saying something like the Earth itself has a time-space field that is a stable, and when something disrupts it, it can be monitored, the disruption of the field?
I probably wouldn't say it exactly that way.
Okay.
Because it might confuse the two. There is a twisting of space-time around the Earth that's called in physics inertial frame dragging for your listeners who want to look it up. But the temporal tremor detector itself detects the energy levels or ripples, if you will, caused by the activation of technologies. But the temporal tremor detectors would have to be deployed in a network around the Earth to be able to, provide the coverage needed.
I see. Okay, and now getting back, this is a question from the guy in the studio. He says, what if you have two fields running at the same time? Let's say, what effect do they have on each other, within the same environment or something like that? What would the time warp fields, how would they affect each other?
Well, the one thing we don't do, because of the nature of the boundary layer, we, of course, don't overlap fields. The effect of having let me be simplistic, and I'll make a very simple analogy because it's a little more complex. Instead of you walking across your flower bed and back, grab a friend in hand and walk across the flower bed and back. The answer is you both would affect the construct of reality, the living organisms that would continue to live, those that would die, those that might be born. And as you walk back, you might return to the same point together, but you will have affected that. And you may potentially have a ripple effect, even if the fields are separated, where you affected the reality of each other.
Mm, I see. Now, going back to eventually, do you think it's then possible to bring a human being back into the past and live at a different time and then bring them back to the present? Would that be, it sounds like that's where you're going, or at one point will go there, right?
Yeah, I think even more interesting, let me tell you something a little more specific, because it's a specific operational mission plan and development in the Pune district in the state of Maharashtra in India. They are actually developing drones that would be taken back in time through the equivalent of a time warp field chamber, would be launched to record historical information and then brought back forward in time with actual recordings of historical events. And this is an actual project underway, a very, very serious project underway for efforts to record history. Their belief is, which I disagree with, and my colleagues there in Mumbai understand that I disagree with them, is that they believe by not sending humans, by sending drones and other types of recording devices back, there's less of a chance of impacting the integrity of the timeline, the historical timeline.
And you disagree. Why?
Because the butterfly effect, as you said so well before, the results of even the subtlest action result in a complex web of interdependencies that's just beyond our capability today to predict. And, you know, I got to tell you, there's one thing. People used to ask me in the 1980s and 90s, Alan, if I could go backwards in time, where would I want to go to? And I never had a good answer for them. If they said, you will go backwards in time, if you go any point in history that you wanted to, where would you go? And I finally found the answer when we built our third generation time warp field generator. That was actually a point where I was really awestruck. And I saw the results. I finally realized the answer. If I could go back in time, I'd go back in a time and a point in history where human society, anybody in human society, thought it was okay to experiment with any type of technology or power without considering first the consequences that it could have on human society or individuals. And that's why I disagree, because the scientists, as much as I respect them and as smart as they are, and I know they're trying to limit the risks, they don't truly understand that they're guessing, just like we are.
Right. But you're saying, I get that, and I get how dangerous it could be, but it may have already happened, and we don't even know, right? Because we're just living in the universe we're living in. And
I disagree, because I'd like to disagree for your listeners.
Sure.
It's not maybe already happening, and I say this with a smile, it is happening. It's not just happening at the Anderson Institute. It's not just happening in India and China and Japan and Korea and all these other locations in the United States. It has been happening. And by the way, for your listeners, we should thank them, because they've been paying for much of the research going on. These projects, like, for example, at Princeton University, and Dr. Wang, people can look up that project, using cesium chambers and quantum entanglement and tunneling to send information faster than light backwards in time. It's your tax dollars that funded a project through the NEC, forwarded over to Princeton to do that kind of work. There are projects embedded all through government contracts with private institutions and agencies that are masked under these beautiful, long, complicated words in obscurity, that when you truly understand, essentially what you're doing is the taxpayers are funding, in this country, are funding time control research, and have been, and will continue to. And the budget is a lot larger than you'll see in the public records, even though you'll find a lot of it there.
So you're saying Obama knows about this technology?
I don't know if Obama would, for an example, you know, as an example, would have all the details. But of course, within the budget, there are very specific projects that have only one specific goal, and that's to explore, for example, the extraction of wormholes in the quantum foam, to doing quantum tunneling and superluminal information propagation, which is a nice word for saying let's send information backwards in time. Wouldn't that be nice? Imagine what it would be is if you had a radio where you could send information backwards in time and understand what actions you need to take now to take advantage of what's happening, or what actions you need to correct to avoid something that happened.
Is there any evidence that that's happening from the future? I think I asked this before, to the present. Are you getting information from the future that you know is from the future to help even develop this technology?
Not with regards to developing the technology. We have done some controlled experiments. This is a very You know, Alan, it's a, for your listeners, it's a very, very, we take the risks very seriously at the Anderson Institute, and we're extremely careful. We move forward in very, very small steps. We have very, very structured test plans that are reviewed and reviewed and triple reviewed to ensure that we understand the risks and what we're learning out of them is valuable. We really try to control that, I guess is the best way we can say to avoid the risks.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but so you don't know if something from the future has already come back and is affecting.
We have done experiments with not with regards to sending information forward and backwards in time, but also sending information. You know, we have the ability to accelerate time rates and then to retard time rates within a time warp field. And we have done controlled experiments with living organisms, only plant organisms when it comes to retarding the time rate. But there are institutions, for example, like India. India is very aggressive. They see, on one hand, they see tremendous potential. And I got to tell you, the people there are wonderful. They really see the opportunity to bring information back from the future to avoid disasters and suffering, whether it be disease, man-made, or natural. They have huge hearts. The challenge is in bringing that information back. We're moving a little slower than them. Actually, I think our technology is more advanced, but we're moving slower because of our concern about unexpected consequences of doing this.
When I met the people at Dahmenhor, they say they've had a time machine. The guy who created Dahmenhor in Italy, Falco, says that the further back you go in time, the safer you are in not disturbing the timeline. So he said he went back 30,000 years to the time of Atlantis. I don't know if it's true, but this is what he said. Have you heard about their time travel technologies?
I've read some articles. We truly believe that to understand the nature of time, you have to study from many disciplines. And I remind your listeners, for two millennia, human society has been trying to define what is time, and nobody's come to a good agreement. And when you have a problem like that, you have to study it from many perspectives. I'm not an expert on what happened to Dahmenhor and what they claim, but I don't judge it either, because I truly believe that when we reach as a human society a common belief and understanding of the true nature of time and our place in it, we're going to see that these views, whether they're religious, spiritual, metaphysical, technological, or any other consciousness-related, they're all going to be all part of the same answer. They're not separate. So I don't judge Dahmenhor. There are many people, though, I got to tell you, there are many scientists who believe that if you do your experiments in isolation, you have less opportunity for that butterfly effect or ripple effect, creating a problem. Mm-hmm. And there are some who've proposed many theories, and we have discussions on it all the time, that if you were to go back further in time, the opportunity for a ripple effect is much less. But we don't believe that to be accurate either, even though it might be less of a risk. There's also potential for bringing back microscopic living organisms, for example, from the distant past that human society and our biological entities aren't able to handle or protect ourselves from. There's so many other consequences. Or introducing a disease from the future into the past that has a catastrophic chain reaction and ripple effect.
Well, what about some of these other people who've said they've been involved in government time travel experiments? There was a guy on Peter Roth's show who talked about, you know, he already doing this. The government already having this. And then, of course, there's the Philadelphia experiment. What do you say about those time travel technologies that supposedly have existed?
Okay, this is where I probably get a little boring as a radio guest, because my background is physics and computer science. So I tend to be why I really take a multidisciplinary approach to studying time, and I'm very much aware of all these different views and perspectives. I really wasn't there, and it's hard to judge. But let me tell you what I think about a few of those. First off, yes, experiments are going on, including experiments. You know, I may be aware and on the inside track in five countries and what some of the government agencies are doing. For me, that's clear, and I understand that. I also know that, for example, in China and Russia, very specifically, that there are projects that I'm unaware of. I also know that technologically, this is something that has been possible and has been exercised since the 1960s at different levels, because we are talking about levels of power of the technology and what they can conduct. So these experiments have been going on. When we look at the legends like the Philadelphia experiment and the Montauk experiment, I can only tell you what I've observed firsthand, is that it's clear that the public documentation about the Philadelphia experiment is flawed. What they were doing there and the scientists involved does not correlate in almost any way with the reports of what happened and the evidence of what happened. I can also extrapolate even closer to Montauk. There was a legend, the story goes, that the assets of the Philadelphia experiment were moved to Montauk, and they combined the technology with that of human consciousness, kind of creating a hybrid solution for transcending time. And
right.
I've walked that facility, and I got to tell you, it's clear to me again, I've been in the underground facility as well as the surface. The publicly stated reason of why that base was there in no way matches the infrastructure of that base. There was something going on maybe one or two orders of magnitude larger and more powerful than what the public was stated. So what I can tell you is there is some disinformation surrounding those experiments. So I do challenge them. I also believe, by the way, you asked me about these experiments in time. I do believe also, and we have a one of our young scientists who's writing a paper right now on his a theory he surfaced, that he believes that time warp fields and time distortion phenomenon can occur naturally on the planet, not just with technology or the power of the human mind. And it's a very interesting paper, and I think he has a real strong basis that I hope it'll be published soon.
Well, supposedly there are natural portals of energy, and how would they occur naturally, in what sort of places?
As I mentioned earlier, as the Earth spins in space, it actually twists space-time around it, just like a spring. It's exactly the same analogy. It's a little more complex mathematically, but essentially that's what it does. It seems very small, but the power levels are extremely high. And if you were to remove the Earth away, it would snap back. Essentially what a time warp field generator does, it essentially is a system that discharges what we call space-time motive force. It essentially discharges the potential energy in the twisted space-time surrounding the Earth. And there are conditions naturally occurring that could, even though rare, based upon the geology of that location on the planet, on the certain natural phenomenon that might be in the atmosphere and the environment around Earth, is that you don't need a technology to do it. It could occur naturally. I'm not saying as frequently as lightning, of course, which strikes our planet, you know, tens of thousands of times a second around the world. We're talking about something that is rare but could occur, where, you know, time distortion fields could occur naturally. Higher frequencies in some areas of occurrence and less in others, but they could occur.
Well, it's not just that. You would see some very bizarre effects if there was a human in there, possibly the Bermuda Triangle or something like that might occur if there was that distortion, you know, with humans around. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Actually, interesting enough, what we create in the lab is much more dangerous than naturally occurring. Let's say hypothetically, just for a moment, this naturally occurring phenomenon can occur, and we can get essentially a time distortion naturally occurring, which we believe is true. What's nice about it is, not nice, the observation for what I've seen of the mathematics say that is that the danger to human beings is less, but you're right, the effects that you would see could be quite unusual and interesting.
Well, you're saying it's also related to gravity, or you said it can affect the gravitational field. There is a place I've been to out west that has a very distorted gravitational field, and And consequently, it might have a distorted time field. Would you think that would be true?
Oh, okay. You just gave me an opportunity to jump on a soapbox. The short answer is yes, but with one clarification. The concept of gravity in our minds is something we've learned from This Is Flawed. A lot of people don't realize, Einstein was very famous because he wrote his special theory of relativity that said fast speeds and relative accelerations could change time, and then he wrote his general theory that talked about gravity. What a lot of people don't know is that later in Einstein's life, he said his general theory of relativity was a waste of time because essentially what we like to say is gravity is simply curved space-time in action, and everything you need to know to understand what people call gravity is embedded in special relativity. Essentially, what I don't like about gravity when we speak to young students is think about what gravity is. Gravity is like time. This is what I liked about St. Augustine. He had his famous question and answer, and I challenge your listeners to do this. He was a philosopher who said that time was an illusion of mind, and he addressed it with his a very thought-provoking dialogue. And in the modern language, it'd be very simply, have your listeners, encourage them to go up on the street and ask somebody if they know what time is. They'll say yes. The second question is, please ask them to explain it to me, and they'll be at a loss for words. And that tells us a very sharp insight in the nature of time, and gravity is the same way. Gravity is a label we put on something we don't understand. Yep. We know in high school we learned the formulas of gravity. We know how to model and predict it, but do we know really why objects want to converge together? And the short answer is no. It's a label we put on something because we can reproduce it and our senses can see it and we can pat ourselves on the back. But in the end, it's a label we put on something we don't understand. So I jumped on my soapbox. I apologize, Alan. I'll jump
on.
No,
don't apologize because you've really researched this and it's fascinating. I mean, Einstein did say mass warps time and space, which is what you're saying with the Earth's field. It warps and twists it. So gravity is an effect of this warping of time and space. I mean, so something makes sense. So in a high gravitational field, there could be a warping of time-space that can be used, I think, for research in with what you're doing. I mean, it makes sense to me that would be a natural environment to possibly conduct some experiments.
Yes, and going back to your point, there are areas, or let's say there could be geological formations and combined with other conditions surrounding the Earth that could cause phenomenons that distort space-time, which essentially does affect gravity. Simply put, for your physicists, young physicists out there, write this down. Gravity is simply curved space-time in action. So anytime you curve space-time through any phenomenon, you get what people like to label gravity. And so that could very well occur the way you describe it, Alan.
Well, according, do you know Nassim Harmeen's work and black hole technologies? Have you looked into that?
Know a little bit about it, but not enough to comment, really, no.
Well, he says there's really only two forces in the universe. There's really only gravity, which pulls things towards, and an electromagnetism, which pushes things out. So he says basically everything is a black hole that's pulling things towards a center of singularity on one end, and then on the other end of that black hole, it's pushing it outward. And he says there is a twisting as well as of these forces. So there are emergent forces of the universe, one that pulls something in and one that pushes it out. And he says basically the formation of the universe is this double Toro effect. And he says at the center of all galaxies, all suns, there's a point of singularity or a black hole that is moving these forces of the universe. I don't know if that really explains it, but it might be interesting.
I understood what you said, and actually I like it. I am familiar with it to that level. I'd go back for your listeners and say it's kind of like the television tuner, and this is the value of your show, by the way. That television tuner, defining things that way is nice, but the true construct of our universe And we know this now. It's what we're learning at all the different time research centers around the world, all the different experiments and what we've learned, what's coming out of the super colliders, the particle accelerators say very, very, very clearly, our world, the basic construct, is a web of information and energy. Everything we sense that's real and all these physical definitions we put on it really are just constructs that are artificially created out of that web of information, artificial senses of that web of information and energy. So in a way, why I like the definition, and it's important that we take steps, it does describe something physical that we'd like to be able to sense, but then again, that precludes the biggest part of the universe, which is that which we can't sense, but we know is out there.
Well, and where does consciousness fit into that? I mean, is consciousness as basic to the universe as time and space and gravity? I mean, it seems like it is somehow.
Right? I think it's much more basic than time and space and gravity. I think space, physical, this is a personal opinion now, I'll jump on my soapbox again without the qualifications, but space, gravity, every physical property, every sense, in the end, it's all about consciousness and energy, or information and energy. And if you look at consciousness, perhaps that's the root of everything. You know, it's more of a root of everything else than trying to describe matter and physical forces, because everything we see as matter and physical forces, really, we see clearly, is really based on information and energy. And I go back to your listeners who are in high school. They did their the light slit experiments where they see photons act as both a particle and a wave, and that they exist in many different forms all at the same time in different dimensions. The way our bodies are constructed of these particles that exist in so many different, the sensation of physical reality that we see, of course, is very real to us, but it's certainly not a fundamental building block of the universe. Consciousness would be much more of a fundamental building block than matter, space, and time.
I mean, I believe that, but then when you look at the vastness of space and these billions of galaxies and billions of stars, you say to yourself, where does consciousness fit into the vastness of the cosmos? I mean, how can you answer that?
Well, I think this is a place, it's like the grandfather paradox. I would say to your listeners, I'll be bold, and I'll say that this type of question and answer is where our rational minds bump into their own limitations. And let's go to the simple phenomenon of quantum entanglement. This is something actually China just, I wish I had the reference to it. I don't have it with me in my notes here. But we just published a broadcast on it. China just set the world record for quantum entanglement. Basically, what quantum entanglement is for your listeners, we talk about the vastness of space. Well, what quantum entanglement shows is that everything, no matter how far apart, is connected and could affect each other, even if they're so far apart that it would be impossible within the laws of physics, if you will, today, for those to affect each other because it would require faster than the speed of light traveling. Yet every day, just like last month, China set a world record for the ability to have quantum entanglement that caused two particles essentially to be connected, even though they were separated by a distance that required faster than light communication.
Right.
So we talk about the vastness of space, but is space really vast, or is it just a place where our rational minds are bumping into their own limitations and our limitations of our senses?
And it seems like your work and a lot of people's work, we really have to reevaluate what is the nature of the universe itself. And I think it's great that we're blowing people's minds and their concepts up to create a new reality of what's possible. This is what I think is so valuable about your work.
I think the nice thing about this too is that, you know, we are in many ways rediscovering ancient wisdom. So much here, but what's really fascinating is over the last two millennia, human society has really separated into the religious and spiritual beliefs and the scientific beliefs, and what's really happening now is a convergence. And this technology, more than any, shows that our new understanding of time and space and the new sciences have more in tune with the ancient views of Buddhism, Hinduism, and Taoism than they have with classical science of only 50 years ago.
Well, that's really refreshing, because the world is moving towards a spiritual, reality. So it's been a kind of spiritual awakening for you, this work. Would you say that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I would say, has this work with time technologies also been a spiritual awakening personally for you?
In many ways it has. I've learned a lot about myself. It's been a long road. It's been about 30 years now of research. I would not define myself as a spiritual person. My hope is someday that I'll reach that level of awareness. I look at, I have the opportunity when I travel not just to meet with very well-respected scientists and teachers and government officials, but I do get a chance to meet with many spiritual leaders, and their understanding of the nature of time and our universe is something just amazes me. So I grow in this job every day, absolutely. But I still haven't reached the level that I'd like to.
Well, I think you are taking a very spiritual perspective on the whole thing when you say it all comes down to consciousness. I think that is what, a spiritual person would say about the nature of reality in general. But where is all this going? I mean, what long-range goals or short-range goals do you have for this time control technology?
Well, the first goal is what we're doing right here, right now. The world needs to be aware. And again, it's not just the Anderson Institute. It's S4, it's Princeton. Watch Dr. Mallett at the University of Connecticut getting a lot of news lately, a lot of news coverage. But the real issue is what's happening every day. As for your audience, what's going to happen and what needs to happen, I would encourage you. This work has been going on. This is not new. What's really new for the scientists, like ourselves and others who are living in it every day and have been for decades, is that the capabilities of the technology and the power has grown exponentially and is continuing. So this is underway now. I'd encourage everybody to listen to it. What's going to come now that the technology has become more powerful and we see five countries going after this? A lot of people say, why don't you just stop doing what you're doing? We could just stop doing this, and then there wouldn't be any risk. The problem is it's too late. It's too late. There are far too many people who have gotten involved in this. So what we really need now is a solution that tries to protect human society. And again, it comes back to transparency and education. And that's what we're starting here. We're launching this year a worldwide global education initiative. As part of the first two steps, we're encouraging our counterparts and other agents, government agencies and private institutions to step forward. The real challenge becomes not in monitoring the technology in the end, but really in getting human society and these government agencies that are involved in this to step forward. Because, it's like a human mind. The human mind has a basic function to rationalize what it senses and perceives with its own belief system. It's crippled. So are governments and nations. What is their function? Number one, to survive. And number two, if they can survive, to prosper. And the fundamental tenet of prospering is, no matter what school of strategy you go to, is you keep your technologies a secret. And we have to overcome that.
I understand the political angles, and I think it's very important. But technologically speaking, what do you hope to achieve, or what does the world itself with time travel technologies hope to achieve in general? Do they want to? I mean, if it's possible to send a drone back in time and videotape some spectacular event without damaging a timeline, would you be interested in seeing that?
Would I be absolutely yes if I believe that, which I don't necessarily believe. But there are some things I do believe that would be valuable. For example, in the world of science fiction, there's always been this magical chamber device called a stasis field that would be used in medical applications. Somebody's rushed to a hospital with life-threatening injuries. They could be put into a stasis chamber where the time rate is slowed down essentially to zero. Time is stopped. So until the situation is ready to be addressed, this could really benefit medical institutions. This is a big part of
it. It could save lives. I mean, it would save hundreds, thousands of lives every day, you know?
Absolutely. The other thing, it could save hundreds of thousands of lives, and this is a big part of what India is doing, that one of the first products they hope to field will be one of the world's first commercially available stasis chambers for use in medical institutions. The other thing that they're doing is also focusing on chambers that can be used for accelerating research. For example, there's a quest for many diseases that plague mankind, for cures for those diseases. And some of them, the process of testing for cures has long incubation or culture cycles. Using accelerated time rate chambers, they could produce results more quickly, perhaps without risking impacting the construct of reality, just like the stasis fields. You know, viewing recording history, you know, I like the fact that you talk about would I support recording histories. I do believe that sending drones into the past to record the past is dangerous because it can have a lot of effects. Some of them, maybe we send microbiological agents backwards in time or bring them forward that you know, living organisms can't handle. Maybe we have a butterfly effect. You know, I know a lot of producers call us and they ask us advice all the time about movies and such and how they should portray technologies in the movie. And we always talk about this. And our conclusion is recording history would be probably much more boring than the wonderful simulations and special effects we have in movies today. So maybe the fiction is better than the reality, but
well,
I don't know.
Maybe. But also, if someone's in a stasis field, what happens to their thought process? Is it, do they get frozen, or does it keep? Do they keep thinking, or are they conscious of time movement itself?
It depends on what level. First off, it's unknown a little bit because when a human being goes inside a time warp field, they have many reactions. Some of them, nothing at all. Some of them, they have a lot of anxiety and fear. Some of them claim to have spiritual awakenings. But we don't know if that's due to the technology or just the fact that they've been plugged into such a dramatically different environment than they're used to. What happens to consciousness? It's a good question. One of the things that is important, it's a clear observation, not just from our work, but others. When a time rate is slowed inside a chamber, if you were sitting inside a time warp field and I was outside of it and your time rate was slowed down to, say, 10 minutes past for one day, when you came out of that time warp field, you would only have sensed in this awareness that only 10 minutes passed. Well, I would have clearly sensed that the full 24 hours had passed. So that's very real. But on a deeper level, we do know that consciousness does tie back somehow to that root of information and energy. And, of course, that information and energy doesn't stop to exist just because the time rate was slowed down, just like that information and energy doesn't stop to exist because somebody moves to a different point in space. It's still there.
Have you said you've done this? Have you put someone in a time chamber and just put it on for 10 minutes for them and 24? Has this been done, actually?
Yeah, in India, at the Anderson Institute, and we believe in the in Russia, this has been done where people have been put inside chambers where time has been accelerated or slowed down. But what we can say for ourselves is we have not put a person inside a field that has been reversed in time.
You mean where they start to regress backwards in time? I mean, they would change their body. They would rejuvenate in a sense, like the flower you mentioned.
Well, it depends on this. Actually, unfortunately, it gets complicated. It is possible using closed time-like curves to move a person backwards in time without regressing their age. Okay. So we expose people to fields without regressing their age. We have never attempted to regress the age, if you will, of a human. Why we have done that, though, with living organisms like plants.
Well, would someone forget, I'm just curious, would someone lose the consciousness of where they were when they entered? Would their consciousness go back in time, or just their body? That's the kind of interesting question, isn't it?
No, it's actually a very simple answer. Everything we've seen, and we actually have a battery of tests that we do that have confirmed this. When somebody is inside a time warp field, their consciousness remains. Their physical body remains. And assuming the experiment has no, you know, damaging effects, when they move backwards in time, essentially they haven't, their age hasn't decreased. They might have, you know, gone backwards. Say they've gone backwards in time 10 years. They might have only experienced an hour of aging in that process of moving back in 10 years. But their consciousness, their awareness remains inside that field. Their effects on the consciousness and awareness outside of the field is a little bit unknown.
What do you mean outside of the field?
Well, it's no different. Let me maybe make a different example. A lot of people are familiar with what's called the twin paradox. That's the scenario where an astronaut, say, travels off to a distant star and returns 20 years later to the Earth, leaving the twin brother she left behind. Well, when she gets back to the Earth after the 20-year journey, say, traveling at 80% the speed of light, what she will find out is that her brother's no longer alive because 200 years passed on Earth. Her brother lived his life to whatever age, passed away, many generations have been born, but to her, she's had, her consciousness has only experienced, or at least her immediate consciousness has only experienced 20 years through her journey. And so that's just a fundamental, that's the foundation of space-time physics, actually, a big part of it.
So if that's what you say you're doing, you could set someone in a field for 10 minutes on the inside of the field, but it'll be 24 hours outside the field. That you're saying this is already happening.
Yes. Where time rates are accelerated or slowed down, absolutely yes. We're not trying to reverse aging.
No, but still that person will only have aged, let's say, 10 minutes as opposed to a whole day. You could put them in even longer and create a different field effect as well then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just a fundamental fallout of special relativity for your listeners. And there's many, many different papers and verifications of that.
But it must be strange to put someone in there for 10 minutes, or for them it being 10 minutes, and you it's a whole day, and then they come out of the field and they have a whole different sense of what's happened within that span of reality. I mean, there's two different realities going on there right next to each other. One that's, you know, let's say this normal, and one that's like just been really slowed down to 10 minutes. I mean, that's very strange.
I would be, it's a very subtle comment, but I would probably say it's only one reality. It's our sensing. It's what we're sensing. In the end, moving through time, it's as simple as moving through space. I'm sorry, when I say simple, what I mean is the effect. A lot of people would say, well, that's two different realities. No, it's not. It's all part of one glorious, beautiful reality. Where it is possible within the laws of our mathematics and physics, and now within technology, to move matter forward and backwards in time and information forward and backwards in time. And that doesn't mean reality has changed. What it means is our sensing, or maybe the manifestation, I can't speak tonight, of time has changed in some way.
Well, it's really exciting work you're doing. And on your website, theandersoninstitute.com, you talk about many different ways of time traveling, quantum tunneling, near light speed travel, wormholes, cosmic strings, and you go through all of them on your website. And this is quite a young field of study in a sense, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you asked that question because I think this would be an opportunity for to jump. Can I jump on my soapbox again?
Please. No, I'm here to promote your work because your work really is about new realities, and it's been quite amazing what you've said so far. So please go ahead.
Okay, there is a tremendous amount of educational information on our website, but I would ask your listeners, please, for yourself and for your friends around you, and as for human society, please do not shrink the magic in this world, in this universe we live in, to the size of our daily routine and material possessions. And this is where I'd use the statement and the opportunity to say, no, it's not new work. Let's just take the last 100 years. Einstein proposed special theory of relativity, then the general theory of relativity. It was accepted in the 1920s. In the late 1940s, Kurt Gödel, a German mathematician, showed clearly that time travel to the past at less than light speed was possible within the laws of math and physics. That was coined by Frank Tipler in the 1960s in a paper that has never been refuted that shows, yes, it's possible to travel back in time using closed time-like curves, slower than the speed of light, without having to violate that law of physics. In the 1960s, Russia did a whole series of experiments. In the 70s and the 80s, we saw it move from one or two countries into the 1990s, where now we see five leading nations active in leading-edge, high-power time control technology research. This isn't new. A lot of these views have been out there. It's really just a question of going back to that issue. Sometimes we put up this wall between science and spirituality. And what's different now? Two things. One, the power level of the technology is getting very high. But number two, the technology that so many of us worship, the science that has become almost important, more important in some lives than the religion and spirituality, which, by the way, is all part of the whole, is now converging. And that's what's really, really exciting about it. It's not new. It's just, it's been occurring in science. It's been occurring in spiritual and religious views. But what's interesting now is they're coming together, and it's becoming clear to the people who've been living on each side of that wall as the wall falls down or as they peer over it, that they really have been looking at the same thing, but just from a different perspective. So I would say that it's not new, and I use that opportunity. Thanks, Sal.
No, I appreciate this, and I guess we should wrap it up soon because it's just been amazing, but it's not new, but it still seems like there's so much more that will be discovered as you work in this field. You know, there's so much that we haven't even thought of that will come about through your experimentation.
I agree, not just our experimentation, but others. We're learning so much, and so much about how beautifully wonderful this universe is we live in. And we realize, and what this technology is doing, if anything, why it does relate to controlling what many people define as the nature of time, what it really is doing, it's even more powerful. It's showing us to step beyond our senses and that there's a much more amazing reality out there than we're able to perceive, and this is helping us see it and come to that awareness.
Well, that sounds great. Can you just give me an example of the amazing reality you've noticed? So,
the fact that everything is connected, and the example of why the fact that creating, exposing a living organism to a contained, for example, time warp field and speeding up or slowing down time can actually have an effect on the construct of reality far away from that experiment. Well, I've always believed it to be true. Seeing that was amazing to me. Seeing time actually regress, move backwards for a living organism, is something that's very remarkable. Seeing the fact that time can be sped up or slowed down is my technicians are going to beat me for this, as easy as turning the volume up or down on your radio in your car is an amazing experience. And like I said, I'm a little bit numb to it because it's been 30 years, but for people who see it, it's a real awakening. But I think the biggest thing for me is the other awakening is seeing the great opportunity as well as the uncertainty and risk that we face as a human society on how we handle, how we further develop and use the technology. Like I said, we have a future perhaps of great suffering before we find a good solution for this, or maybe this is that perfect storm that will allow people to drop these walls around the borders of nations and religions and politics and other beliefs and actually start working together as one human society as a whole to do what's right and best.
I think it does bring hope to the planet to work together, but it also brings hope to the individual when you say we have the power and consciousness. It's the thing that we have in us can control the nature of our reality and of the time field we live in. This force of our own individual consciousness, I think, can do that. Feels like it can.
I agree completely, and I think we're gonna spin around the answer. We're spiraling in on it. The great philosophers and religions have struggled with this for millennia. But like I said, the one thing I do know for sure, as I see this, as we learn more every day, is that when, as a human society, we stand up and we say we truly now understand the nature of time, what we're going to realize is that all these different views from literature, the arts, religion, spirituality, science, and technology all are going to be looking at the same answer. They're just a different perspective looking at the same truth from a different angle. And for me, that's something I really feel is coming, and I look forward to that because I think once that happens, then a new growth can begin.
Once this grand sort of unification of or realization is reached globally, we'll come to a new paradigm of who we are. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think that I think there will be a unification. Not in terms of a grand unification theory, but a unification of human society. Because many times we're separated by the walls of nations or geography. We're separated by the views of religions and other types of beliefs. We tend to judge each other as good and bad or right and wrong. When the beliefs of Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, classical physics, quantum physics, and all these other beliefs come to the true nature of time, what we're going to see is that they were all looking at the same thing. At it with a different perspective. And I think that will unify the people that typically separate themselves by those definitions.
Mm-hmm. And how would someone get involved in this research if they wanted to, you sort of created it in a sense, but how would someone listening to this say, wow, that's something that's fascinating. How do I connect in? What do you suggest?
Well, there's a couple things. First off, make a business of promoting or selling anything. We have a website, theandersoninstitute.com. Tremendous amount of free information there. There are a couple videos for sale. All profits actually are donated to United Nations youth educational programs. But actually, almost all the videos are available for free under the education tab of the website. The other way people can get involved is please, I'd encourage you, please join me on Facebook. I'm there under David Lewis Anderson. Lewis is Lewis. Please join us. We do publish a daily news updates, not just what's happening at the Anderson Institute, but all around the world with regards to the nature of time. And also we have a Time Research Association that's also available on Facebook, disseminating the same information. So, and there's a lot more coming in the next few months.
Are you going to be in New York at all? I mean, would you like to do a presentation here? Are you interested in that?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, when we do, I was just in New York, must have been about 6 weeks ago, and the nice thing, I'd always be interested in doing a presentation if there's an educational value in it. And when we do live presentations, we actually have permission to show different types of footage from our facility as well. We don't distribute it on mass media, at least not yet. Not for actually, well, the last thing I'd say, we do have a new documentary coming out in about 2 months. So,
oh, really? Where will that be seen? Where can we look for it, the documentary?
Well, it'd be, of course, be announced on our website and via the social media forums, and it would be available on Amazon.com and probably several other locations. I'm not sure exactly where it'll be distributed.
Well, let me know if you want to come to New York. Maybe we could set an evening up for you here somewhere to do a presentation. That would be really fascinating.
Yeah, it's wonderful to meet with people. We don't really do a lot of public appearances. They are quite limited, but maybe we could discuss that offline. And
yeah, let's talk about that. And there's some other connections I want to make for you as well, where you could do some other programs that can put this information out there.
It's been
really amazing to hear what has already taken place, that you can actually slow down timelines. I'm really going to sit with this and contemplate it. And thank you for everything you've shared with us. Is there anything else that you'd like to just have people, you know, contemplate?
No, I think we've touched on a lot of good points. I would encourage everybody to understand that, you know, please, this is not new, and it's not just about the Anderson Institute. This work has been going on. And by the way, you're paying for it, so I would say thank you as well. But at the same time, watch what's happening. Dig a little deeper. Because what I think you're going to see is something much more remarkable than just a new technological advancement. I really do think that when we really try to look at, you know, our awareness of ourselves and our universe and how we're evolving, this technology is holding some pretty sharp insights that might help us all on our personal journeys as we try to better lead those lives that we all want to lead. So
right. Oh, well, speaking about that, I just had one more question. Do you ever have any contact or awareness of ET forces, extraterrestrial type of forces, or is that outside your field of study?
It's outside of our field. We do of course look at information on that. We actually have an interesting policy. Every employee at the Anderson Institute, regardless of their position, must spend 8 hours a month in training studying a non-technical view or perspective of time. And of course, encounters with possible time travelers from our futures are one of those. We really aren't experts in the area, but we do tend to have a lot of discussions at the same time.
Uh-huh. So what do you want to share any of your personal beliefs about extraterrestrials and their technologies?
Oh, well, I would no. Interesting. Well, yeah, I would. Interesting enough, actually, we're going to be publishing an article on that. I think that'll go out in the October timeframe. It'll be our first article ever because we typically don't write about the subject. But my personal opinion is, first, I'm not really qualified to comment, but when you consider, when we look at what we understand today about time control technologies, the various ones that are in use today, and if we hypothetically said, let's build a craft that can travel using these technologies in a more refined capability, what do the laws of mathematics and physics say an observer would see? And what's interesting to us is that when you look at the observations of people who have had close encounters, and they describe the different phenomenon they've seen in terms of movement and light and sound, they are extremely consistent, higher than 95% consistent with what the new laws of mathematics and physics of time say they should see if these vehicles were using time control technologies. So that I can tell you. I know that was a little too couched for safety, but...
No, I get it, and that's very interesting, and thanks for sharing that. I think that's a really great confirmation for me anyway, that there is a reality to some of what people have seen. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you again for all your research and discoveries, because this is history. I know you say where history is becoming an experiential science, experimental science, but you know, you're making history and you're erasing it too. No, you're making history. And I'm really fascinated. So hopefully we can talk again and find out any developments in this area. So
Maybe we can find an opportunity to meet and speak in person in New York. That would be a great opportunity. But I wish you a wonderful night, and thank you again so much, Alan, and all my best regards to all your listeners. And I'd invite them again to please join us, and we'll do our best to respond if there are any questions out after the show.
Definitely. And I've been talking to David Anderson of the AndersonInstitute.com, Time Travel Technologies. It's just amazing, because it's not science fiction. It is a reality. And you've really confirmed a lot of what I've suspected is possible, just intuitively. So thanks for being a guest on New Realities.
My pleasure, Alan.
This is New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. And if you want to hear this program again, it'll be archived on bbsradio.com and also be archived on newrealities.com under New Sciences. So if you have any questions, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll listen next week. Thank you. Waking up in the middle of the day, feels like